Hello and welcome to Bookbagger Podcast. Today I am joined by Amy Goldsmith, author of Those We Drown. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me on. It's exciting.
So, Amy, what can you tell us about Those We Drown and yourself?
So Those We Drown is a young adult horror novel about a girl called Liv who gets invited on this once-in-a-lifetime trip. On a cruise ship. Sorry, I'm looking for the book. So this is a book if you are looking at this on YouTube. And basically, when she is on board the ship, the first night she has a big argument with her best friend, and she goes to her cabin to sleep. And that night she has this nightmare where Will, her best friend, is in her room, and he's all kind of wet, like he's been pulled up from the ocean. And he tells her that the sea provides. And then what follows is kind of this twisty psychological horror with cults and conspiracies and a little bit of ocean horror and Greek mythology too. So if you like Percy Jackson and you like horror, I think this would be a really good book for you. I live in the southeast with my family, and yeah, I write books and I'm obsessed with horror.
I mean, isn't it obvious you write horror novels? You're obsessed with horror.
I absolutely am.
Right. So, talking about horror, where did your love of horror stem from? Do you remember reading any memorable books or standout authors as a child, which you use as inspiration nowadays?
Yeah, that's a really good question. As far back as I can remember, I always was attracted to like the dark parts of books. So even, you know, like when my parents read me fairy tales, I really liked the creepy ones like Hansel and Gretel and the Juniper Tree. So I was always kind of attracted to that. Like some people get thrills from roller coasters. I just really like to be scared. Like not in like actually in real life scared, but in books and movies and things like that. And then when I got a bit older, I really got into this series of books called Fighting Fantasy, which are kind of like game books, like make choose your own adventure style books where you have to make decisions and turn to different pages. And most of them were fantasy set, but my absolute favorite was this book called House of Hell. And it basically starts off, you're this person, your car breaks down, and you go to this house to look for help. And the house is like full of devil worshippers, and you have to try and escape it. It was pretty strong stuff for a kid's book, but I loved it. And then ever since, I've just always read a lot of horror. Point horror was a big thing when I was growing up as well, which were kind of like horror books specifically for teenagers. And I loved the babysitter books. I think there was a couple of those. And I think my favorite one was called Trick or Treat. And they were just really good. And Christopher Pike as well was an author I loved as a teenager. He wrote lots of really spooky books. So yeah, pretty much always grew up reading horror.
And do you remember your first attempt at writing a novel?
Indeed. I was about 15, I think, when I sat down and wrote like my first novel on an electric typewriter. It just shows how long ago that was. This is actually pre-internet as well. And it was basically about this couple who buy a house that's haunted, and they contact this paranormal detective guy called, I think he was called Jonathan Shadow or something like that. And looking back now, I can see that it was like really thinly veiled fan fiction based on the X-Files, because I had a massive crush on Fox Mulder. So yeah, that was my first attempt to writing a book. I think I've got it somewhere. So I remember printing it out, but oh no, it was on a typewriter. But yeah, it was pretty rubbish.
And before Those We Drown got published, is there anything you wish you had known before being published?
Yeah, that is a great question. I think one of the things that I didn't realize is that when you get published, I always kind of saw getting published as like, you know, the pinnacle, that's it, you've achieved your dream. And I have, it's amazing. But I didn't know that you know, there's still so much work you have to do. And the rejection keeps coming. Just because you've published one book, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to publish another one. You know, you never really know if your next book's going to be your last or not. Yeah, I think it's trickier. And I didn't realize how much social media would play into it, and you know, the promotion and things like that. So yeah, I think, I mean, I don't think I would have done anything differently necessarily, but it would have been, I think there's a lot of mystery in publishing. It's quite a opaque business at times. So yeah, I think the more you find out, the better, really.
And when it comes to writing, do you have any writing quirks?
Yeah, I've thought about this. I don't really have anything that weird. Like, I don't, you know, stand on my head when I'm drafting or anything. But I mean, coffee, that's not really a quirk, is it? I just kind of need that to keep me alive. I always have a notebook, which I associate with all of my books. So each book has its specific notebook where I write down, you know, like snippets and inspiration, like maybe songs that kind of, you know, are inspiring and things like that. I think having a notebook like as a kind of crutch is a bit of a quirk for me.
And you talked a little bit about rejection. So nowadays, how do you deal with rejection?
I think I deal with it like everyone else. I just, you know, cry, get sad for a bit, might eat a donut or have a glass of wine. I like to say that it gets easier the more you experience it, but it doesn't. But it is a massive part of the industry, this massive part of publishing. So I do think you develop a thick skin, or you need to have a thick skin before getting into it, because it is so much rejection all the time.
One of the things about Those We Drown was it was originally titled Ocean Dark, Ocean Deep. Who came up with the new title, and do you remember some of the other ideas that were floating around?
I do. I actually came up with Those We Drown in the end, so I can legitimately take credit for that, which is good. But yeah, so originally they didn't like ocean. Well, it's not like they didn't like it. They felt that it was more suitable to kind of like a dark fairy tale vibe. So it was shortened to Ocean Dark for a long time. But then again, the publishing team at Delacorte kind of said, oh, you know, maybe we can do better than this. So we had lots of emails back and forth about changing the title, which has happened with all of my books. I just don't think I'm very good at titling them. It's like my Achilles heel. But some of the past ones, I actually looked them up, were Ravenous Waters, Hungry Waters, which is a favourite. The Lure, but well, that kind of reminded me a bit too much of fishing. Don't Slip Under, Darker Waters, Call to Darker Waters, The Devouring Deep. I think that was too similar to a book that's already out there. So in the end, I'm not sure how I came up with it. I think I was just throwing words together. And yeah, but I think when you find the perfect title, you instantly know. And like everyone was kind of like, yep, Those Who Drown, that is it. I'm not really precious about titles. I wouldn't, you know, I don't mind if they're changed. If they said, you know, suggested something and I hated it, I'd probably, you know, say something. But on the whole, I really trust my publishers, because they know way more about like the market and the business than I do. So yeah, had quite a few titles.
You had previously mentioned that in earlier drafts, the story of Those We Drown was very different from what it is today. Can you tell us what that story would have been like and how you go about revisions?
Yeah, so originally it kind of started as like a young adult thriller rather than a horror, which is actually kind of off-brand for me. But I'm much more of a horror person. But initially I kind of saw it as like a young adult version of, I don't know if you know Ruth Ware. She writes a lot of thrillers. And she wrote this book called The Woman in Cabin 10, which is really good. It's an adult thriller about someone who watches someone get pushed off a boat. And then everyone kind of denies knowing her. I mean, obviously I was gonna change the plot. But that was kind of, I just thought that's such a great idea. Like, how could I make something similar for young adults? And so I had an idea of this rich heiress who actually eventually became the Adora character in Those Who Drown, falling overboard and it turning into some kind of twisty murder mystery where like she jumped, but she didn't really. But I just got really tied up with the plot. I'm not much of a Agatha Christie type. So I started thinking more broadly, and I started to sort of think, what if there was a cult on board the ship? And then I started thinking about who else might be on the ship with her. Maybe her friends were like influencer types. And then I kind of thought, what if they were called the Sirens? And from there, the kind of Greek mythology aspect came. So yeah, it did kind of start quite differently, but I really liked what it turned into. It did go through quite a few revisions. I actually sold it on an R&R, which is a revise and resubmit. So the editor liked it. They said, you know, can you make these changes? And then we'll see. So I did. And yeah, because the plot is quite twisty, it was, you know, it took a while to get it to hang together and make sense.
Out of all the characters you've written in Those Who Drown, is there one you relate to the most?
Yeah, I think predictably Liv. I'm pretty bookish and introverted. And so I wanted to write a character that was, you know, similar and not kind of like the, you know, chosen one, you know, really super smart and brave and confident. Yeah, and some people have kind of said, oh, if I was Liv, I'd go straight to the captain and tell him to stop the ship and all of that. And I kind of think, well, as a teenager, I absolutely would not have done that. I would be way too scared to cause a fuss or cause any trouble. So I would probably, you know, like Liv does, minimize as much as I can until things got really bad. So yeah, I would say Liv.
And you have previously mentioned that you have a fear of cruise ships. What do you find so scary about them, and how did this influence Those Who Drown?
Yeah, I just I think it's the same reason that I find hotels scary. It's just all those empty rooms and, you know, long corridors and all the history, like all the people that have died on them and things like that. It's just inherently creepy. And cruise ships are basically just, you know, massive floating hotels. So, you know, adding in to the fact that they're on the sea, and there's loads of terrifying things in the sea as well. Yeah, I think it's just terrifying. I'm actually surprised that there aren't like as many books, horror books written on cruise ships as there are about hotels, to be honest, because there's a lot of, I think a lot of material in cruise ships when it comes to horror, for sure.
There's definitely a thriller novel that's set on a cruise ship. It's called The Stranded, and I'm not sure if you've heard of it or read it.
No, I haven't actually. Is it good?
Yeah.
Let's check that one out.
So, in your book, Liv is invited on the ship as part of her scholarship, but soon gets wrapped up in the tragedies happening aboard the Eos. Did Liv manage to find the time to complete her scholarship within the midst of everything going on? How does that work exactly?
Yeah, that's a good question. Originally, I did kind of have it as like a study program on board the cruise ship, but it became kind of difficult trying to, you know, work that into the plot with them going to lessons and things like that. So it wasn't quite working. So it's set up as more like an enrichment trip where she basically, because she's a working class student, she has this opportunity to, you know, visit different countries and really sort of experience things that she might not have been able to without the trip. So it's more of an enrichment aspect than her actually doing any studying on the ship, because I just think it would have been really difficult to have that, you know, work in the story and still keep it as taut as it is.
One point of inspiration I understand you have used in multiple projects is the use of mythology and folklore. How do you decide which myths to pull from for specific projects?
Yeah, so again, it's kind of the scary things, the scary parts of folklore that I'm drawn to, and mythology. And I think with Greek mythology, there's so much that's really scary, because you have all these gods who are pretty uncaring and horrible. And then you have, you know, the Minotaur and Gorgons and the Chimera. So I think Greek mythology is like a really amazing place to get inspiration from. And then with my next book, I kind of drew from Irish mythology and the Banshee, which is this spirit. She's a woman who is often found by water brushing her hair. And when she screams, it's meant to kind of foretell like a death in the family if you hear it, which is terrifying. So I thought it would be like a really great thing to, you know, include in a book.
One of the things I was just thinking of as you were saying the Banshee was the Mexican myth of La Llorona, which is basically the same. I'm not sure if you've heard of La Llorona.
Yeah, there's a movie about it, isn't it? I haven't seen it. It's on my radar, but yeah, it looks really creepy. I think it's funny how, you know, you do get kind of similar myths across, you know, cultures sometimes. It's really interesting.
At Liv learns of the true events aboard the Eos. The sirens give her a choice to join them or be sacrificed to the sea. Under any circumstances, do you think Liv would have accepted their offer? And this is a spoiler question, so for anyone listening, this is the point to tune out.
Yeah, I think that was such a great question. And I thought about this, and I genuinely don't think she would, because of the fact that she knew that it wasn't, her parents wouldn't sacrifice her. Like, she just knew they would never do that. She kind of got lumped in with Will, thanks to Will's dad. So I think she would not have accepted their offer because, you know, she's a decent person and wanted to get back to her family and not, you know, travel the world with a bunch of evil influences sacrificing people's children.
At the end of the book, Liv and Con set the boat on fire, leaving the sirens behind, while she and Con escape on a lifeboat. In the original Greek myth, the sirens were immortal. Is it the same case for your sirens?
Yeah, that's a good question. I did research the whole siren mythology. And one of the things I read was that they are immortal, but if you can get past them without being lured in by their song, then they kind of get destroyed. So I thought that was really interesting. And if you've read the book, it does kind of end on a... it has a very interesting ending. And I think that is probably, well, I think Con actually says that in the last chapter, that because they've escaped, they're meant to die. But I did like leaving it open-ended. I think that's a great thing to do in horror, because it really leaves you sort of thinking, you know, what's going to happen or what has happened. So
at the moment, there are no plans for a sequel?
Yeah, that's something I get asked a lot, actually, because of, I think, the way that it ends, like the whole open-ended, they're kind of, spoiler alert, they're trapped on this, rescue boat, and you don't know whether they're going to make it. They only have one flare left. So I didn't write it, honestly, with a sequel in mind, and there's no plans for one. But never say never, because I do like the idea of, like, a sequel with them kind of reaching New York. In the lifeboat, and yeah, having some, you know, maybe becoming like a duo tracking down evil creatures from Greek mythology. I don't know if it would work, but it would be interesting to give it a go.
What advice would you give to your younger self that you think would be useful to young aspiring horror writers?
Yeah, that was a tricky one. I grew up like really working class. So my dad was a policeman, my mom was a cleaner, and I was actively discouraged from following my dreams of becoming an author. And not because they were mean or cruel, they just kind of, you know, said to me, specifically my dad, that you're not going to get a job writing stories, you know, that's not going to pay your rent. And back then, this was pre-internet, so I had no idea how to get published anyway. So I ended up going into teaching, which I loved, and, you know, that's what I've done most of my life. So, yeah, I would actually now say the opposite, like chase that dream, but also be realistic. So when I was writing, it was always, you know, on the side, in the evenings, at the weekends. So I would say, yeah, definitely chase your dream, but be prepared to work for it. Yeah.
What do you have coming out next? And can you tease anything about what you are currently working on?
That's a good question. So Our Wicked Histories is my next release. It's coming out in July with Delacorte Press. And it's a really spooky little book. It's much more of a gothic feel than Those Who Drown. It's kind of set in this damp, rain-drenched manor in Ireland by this lake that's meant to be, or it's rumoured to be, haunted by a banshee. But at the same time, it's also set in this kind of fancy art school because there's like a dual timeline going on throughout the book, which is a narrative kind of trick that I love because, you know, as it kind of, the two timelines are kind of going on, then it starts to, the past begins to like shed more light on what's going on in the present. And it's about a girl called Meg. She's quite different to Liv. She's more kind of reactive and angry. And she gets involved with this kind of mysterious, alluring, lovely pair of twins called Lottie and Sebastian. And yeah, so if you like sort of gothic, creepy, spooky books, I think this would be perfect. It's originally based on The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe. It does actually diverge quite a lot from that now, but it's, yeah, really spooky. It has Ouija boards and glamorous parties and banshees. And next year I have another horror book coming out called Predatory Natures, also of Delacorte, and that's kind of I called it Plants on a Train, like Snakes on a Plane, because it's about creepy plants on a train. And right now I'm actually working on an adult book, which is exciting, an adult horror. And I don't know what's going to happen with that, because like I say, you never know what's going to happen, you never know. Nothing's really guaranteed in publishing, but I'm really loving working on that. So I'd love for that to see the light of day one day too. It's set in a hospital. That's all I'm going to say for now. But yeah, lots coming up.
All of your books have different covers. How does a cover design go about being created? And did you have any input into your cover designs?
Yeah, so the publisher I work with in the US, Delacorte Press, they are amazing. They always ask for my input, and you know, if I have like a mood board or something, or they ask what covers I've seen that I really like. So they do always ask for my input. I have to say, the two covers that they came up with contain none of my input, but I don't mind because they are absolutely amazing. Like, I really have got so lucky when it comes to cover design. I'm super happy with both of them. They are really different, but I think they both suit the books perfectly. So, yeah.
And lastly, where can readers find you online?
So I'm most active on Instagram at @AmyGoldsmith_writes. I am on Twitter, but I find it really scary. X now, so I don't really go on there very much, and I do have a TikTok, but I don't really do like proper TikTok. So yeah, Instagram is definitely where I am most active.
And your website for those looking for it?
Oh yeah, it's just amygoldsmith.co.uk.
Right, thank you so much.
Thank you.